A great thanks to Dr. Lynn Turner, Undine Selbach, and Ron Beaulieu, the Edinburgh Companion to Animal Studies, where these ideas were first listed and where more elaboration can be found. Learning how to listen. One, required first and foremost is an inhabited, wearable relation to plurality. This is a deeply post-Newtonian move which accepts and indeed cherishes the fact that two or more objects can, often do, and in this case, the case of listening, must occupy the same place at the same time without dominating or annihilating either object. In so accepting, this kind of non-layering dimensionality involved also is a deeply post-dialectic move. This is closer to a logic of techna, a technology of care, as Foucault would later name it, one that sidesteps the abyssal logics of a thesis, antithesis, transcendence, quasi or otherwise, with its attending excluded middles, castrated lacks, and overrated phalluses. Listening, a rather multitonal affair, multicolored, multisensorial, present tense indifference to each other's being here now, a kind of suspended groundless awareness which in being without ground enables an openness to the unexpected, a listening tremble that takes note without knowing the why, a nonverbal gut feeling embodied cognition which enables in its whylessness an oddly territorialized shared presence, a kind of transportable safe house erected at the very moment of suspended awareness. The Ojibwe, call it Madwijun, the unconditional herd flowing where the two rivers meet. Two, I first saw my Madwijun, a semi-feral Mustang whose split down the middle white-brown face earned him the corrupted English version name, Manhattan, while speeding in a black two-seater sports car over an open superhighway in that part of the country where diamond-shaped deer signs forewarn of imminent death should one or more mobile parties cross paths. Oh, he was a beautiful beast. Though the hapless rider he was dragging across the four lanes probably thought less of his beauty at that exact moment. With one foot slipped through the stirrup, the other flapping in the wind, it was a minor miracle that both horse and rider made it across without serious injury. So when a large hand-painted sign suddenly appeared at the side of the road boasting a daunting 15,000 hectares of unspoiled land with undulating forest and natural fences over which one could sail at a trot or full throttle gallop, when across the battered sign the words, "Fantastic Western Trail Ride for all you weary travelers, young and old, no experience needed," showed itself, the tiny nerve endings at the base of my pineal gland did a dance of recognition. The promise of paradise beckoned across those asphalt spits like the proverbial siren song to unblocked ears. Oh, I was a member of that tribe. So when the exit appeared, oh, I took it. Paradise, you know, reveals itself in a variety of forms. A pockmarked, lazily winding, thin slice of a road eventually opened onto what could only be described as a kind of soup kitchen for homeless horses, 26 to be exact, 27 if one counted Manhattan, who had sprung into view from a completely different entrance, sweaty and snorting with a screaming, angry rider in tow. An Annie Get Your Gun look-alike, fashion check shirt, rodeo chaps, and filthy, dirty boots, in one seamless movement, marched over to Manhattan, grabbed the reins, told him in no uncertain terms, "Quit it," helped the furious, humiliated, well-heeled youngish woman off the saddle and flatly announced, "Manhattan's a dangerous horse with those he don't like," narrowing her eyes beadily at the rider, who was in turn shouting lawsuits and closures. Without missing a beat, she glared at me and said, just as matter-of-factly, "Do you like the look of this horse? I charge very reasonable rates, and you can have him for the cost of his feed. Otherwise, he'll be carted to the glue factory." Oh, the white of Manhattan's rebellious eye against the black of his wild mane gave him a certain unstable look at the best of times. But it was fair to say, though, that perhaps the urban punk blonde hair framed against black thick eyeliner lids and a leather-clad body gave off a similar impression. Certainly at that very moment, we acknowledged a familiar something about each other, a hunger, an impatience, a flicker of fear, a raw compassion, a not fitting in, a flight from boredom. Whatever it was, perhaps all these and more, it could safely be said that here emerged a tangle of unexpected gut recognition, a strangely satiating tremble, a glitch as trembles of this nature so often show themselves right in the center of the chest. Three, the very kernel of a listening encounter, this dimensionally plural, inhabited here and now yes-saying of attunement, surfs the flight lines of proximity and distance without, in so surfing, bifurcating those trembled and entangled waves in the classical tropes of dominance and submission, or to attend to canonical divisions, intellect as rationality versus nature as sense. This listening encounter, whose philosophical grammar instead enables a one-to-one rethink of thinking as a more practical prosaic techna rather than an activity game of two halves, invigorates everything it touches with both an indifference to the out there whilst instantaneously making room for it. This making room simultaneously acknowledges an immediate and intimate sharing of space with and amongst those beings with whom the encounter will have drawn into its mix. Oh, this is a delicate, discursive bridge, a connection, a dwelling, a clearing, call it what one may. This multiple singularity encounter enables a kind of ecology of space to take shape, to take speed, pace, step, stride, run, even take leap, often without moving an inch. In this way, the attuned beings of encounter can and do begin their thaw of identity politics, can and do begin to disrobe identity itself, sidestepping the proper noun etiquette of universal object-oriented concepts in favor of more mellifluous, ephemeral, improper, fuzzy logic attractors, the subjunctive's infinitely redrawn anti-infinitive be, the gerund's ergonomic nod to vitality and moving, the adjective's paradoxically fuzzy but pinpointing ish, born of and by attunement, a kind of non-judgmental slice of life wellness shelter of sorts, a dwelling house spa without the black and white bureaucratic interferences of identity code enforcers, a story and its telling now emerges in its minor key. Its embrace encaptures the strange radical mattering of a not quite here, not quite not here, but here and there nevertheless, differently embodied viva voce, at once a calling and a listening encounter, one which forms in its telling, its calling, its hearing, its listening, an intensive fabric of a pluralized now, of a life shared. This impersonal, personal sharing of life's creative genealogies, the dying art of storytelling, as Benjamin would say, demands at the very moment of the listening encounter an adventure ear, a manifolded ear, the very event of being singular, plural, nancy. No need for goals or grounds, no need to focus on receiver or sender. At best, there's a call for the ears to be lent or bent or folded, or just be. Instead of divide and conquer, this listening, calling, hearing, slice of life bridge making enables. It enables a certain multiple singularity of the being with now to take place. It enables the generating of shared counsel with its purposeless collective generosity stoked by the immediacy of caring indifference. It enables a certain collective social mindfulness to emerge, one that sidesteps reason without being unreasonable, one that sidesteps logic without being illogical, gift-giving at its very best, at its most quiet, most gentle level, a pleasure gift, a magic garden gift, a telling, sharing, hearing, secret bridge-building gift, which at the moment, the very moment of gifting, enables one just to be communally, alone, together. Nothing more nor less than the shared ecology of caring, a certain kind of gift, this Benjaminian storytelling gift, the very weaving of wisdom into the fabric of life. 4. Of course, being the wise prankster that he was, Manhattan was quite adept at weaving counsel into the fabric of life. I came to learn that whenever Manhattan had managed to have one of those wild roam the countryside nights, he was particularly difficult to catch the next morning, and no amount of running toward him or away or alongside with or without treats would work. Until ready to be caught, the flash of white cold breath, the zigzag bolt around the fields meant that he enjoyed to the max his version of just horsing around. In fact, it would not be wrong to say that the nature of our being with together usually entailed some kind of horseplay, a promise of play whilst engaging in play, the promise of adventure, big or small, whilst journeying together with no necessary or exacting purpose in mind. Play, the suspended need for possessive individualism, enabling in its place a loosely drawn us without losing the sensual self in the process, without losing, that is to say, the laughter self, the smelly self, the erotic self, the out of breath self, the troubled self, the I don't give a damn self, all the cells fitting in and out of this us playtime adventure, forming in its wake a kind of sturdy intensity we might even call, dare it be said, trust. Mid-November, when the temperatures in that part of the world often dip far below zero, the day had started rather brisk but sunny and not overly cold. But from the moment we found our clearing, from the moment we started to arrange ourselves in the usual way, it was apparent something was afoot. An odd, restless shudder ran down Manhattan's spine as soon as I had dismounted, a hard, disturbed pawing on the ground, a refusal to relax. From first glance, I could notice nothing out of the ordinary. No bears, no coyotes, no nothing. But even the local illegal hunters with their pot-shot orange hats and beer-belly stupidities. But then something in the middle distance, a makeshift grave, fairly recently dug, with, as it would happen, a torn pair of briefs and a stuffed shirt under a nearby bush. About 6 months previously, there had been a number of posters dotted along the perimeter of the wood concerning a missing young woman feared to have been abducted, probably sexually assaulted, and as nothing had come to light in the months that followed, feared to have been murdered. And here was a makeshift grave. And here were telltale signs of something quite seriously out of place. And now this friendly sun had been replaced by chilling rain. And now this gentle clearing had been replaced with fears of gruesome tragedy. And now lightning bolts began shooting down from the heavens as though Thor himself took hold of our world and, taking great aim at any moving object in an open field, dared us to proceed. My shivering cold and rather useless thoughts included camouflaging amongst the shrubs to wait out the storm in ever-worsening conditions. Manhattan's irritable impatience demanded a different choice: outrun the lightning bolts and entrust him to get us home. After all, I had witnessed his remarkable track record on motorways with an equally remarkable sense of direction. Leaning low on his neck and holding fast to his wild mane, Manhattan and I took flight. "Get us home, my friend," I whispered to him. And that is precisely what he did, albeit not quite the home I had in mind. For while we outraced the lightning with the agility of a springbok, we made it all the way to Curve Lake 35, the Ojibwe's land reserve, 14 kilometers north of where I thought we were meant to be. No one was surprised to see him. No one was surprised to learn that he had led me to that grim burial plot and would in time lead the police back to it. No one was surprised that he, their Madwijan, would choose to save our lives against the brutal storms and would do so by outpacing the gods. 5. In these ever-widening half-circle listening encounters emerge oddly cathected, multidimensional responsibilities, response-abilities, barad, which forge, enable a kind of libidinal Mobius strip whose exchange circulation economy produces at one and the same time the superpositional collective response-abilities I want to name radical matter, the pluralized, non-locality, heterogeneic being with encounters, cognized but not overthought. Radical matter as radical empathy or radical generosity, with its nod to Penrose's reconsideration of Einstein's 1927 spooky action at a distance throwaway remark, dismissing what until then was unproven, that entanglement can and does occur faster than the speed of light, irrespective of its where. So now picture this. Picture a moonless winter evening where the provenance of light emanates more from the deep snow-encrusted ground rather than the sky itself. Now picture the bewitching hour of midnight strewn with 27 horses, some with and some without riders, their breasts white cold against the frozen air. Here we were, a somewhat motley crew of sentient beings whose friendships had long ago crossed the blood-brain barrier. Everywhere the crunch, squelch rhythm of hooves slicing the thick atmosphere of a profoundly invigorating silence, with undulating lanterns blinking as walking geared up to the trot, then a quick shift into canter, and then in a fit of moonless madness to high voltage galloping. And this is precisely how we came upon a gelding lying in the middle of a field, who judging by the no longer free-flowing blood which at some point had shot out from a horrifically torn leg, meant that he must have lain there dying and then dead for at least a few hours or more. And then the extraordinary happened. As the riders silently moved away, the riderless horses remained. Out of the blackened horizon from points unknown, a few other Mustangs joined the group, now numbering around 20. In what seemed to go on for quite some time, they kept encircling their fallen comrade, and once forming that circle, stood stock still. Paying their respects to him and to each other, it was then all over, dispersing as silently as they had come. Radical empathy. no more or less than a superpositional event, the instantaneous entanglement of sensuous response abilities, faster than the speed of light, where proximity and distance no longer impede their pluralized sticky cohesions. Playful, sonorous, cruel, boring, a wild aliveness to detail. I want to call this radical matter a kind of anamaterialism, a feedback loop listening encounter of the technospheric kind. But perhaps it can just be called friendship.